If you were listening to John's Gospel in the first 200 years of the church, you would not have heard that story at all. That event was not recorded in the first edition of John's Gospel. It was inserted around the end of the 3rd century. So the editors have popped this story in, this account in, certainly to work with the theme of the gospel in that particular place. But also I suspect that Jesus' response there to the woman caught, mind you, in the very act of adultery, that was something that stayed in a lively manner with the early church. That action and the words of Jesus, his great compassion there, must have been quite a buzz in the community. Otherwise, he wouldn't have put it in. The editors wouldn't have put it in back then. It's interesting, this particular story, because now we know that it's what's called in biblical language an insert. So it's something that's happened at another time, but they're putting it in there to make it work, to drive home a point. And the point really is about judgment. So the story starts off at the Mount of Olives. Now, the Mount of Olives, for the Hebrew people, is the place where the final judgment is going to take place. And that was a very powerful belief at that time as well. So the final judgment was going to take place on the Mount of Olives. That is mentioned right at the beginning of the reading. Then Jesus goes down to the synagogue or to the temple. That's the only time that the Mount of Olives gets mentioned in the entirety of John's Gospel. So this judgment theme must be very important. Next things that happens is that we're told the scribes and the Pharisees. Scribes are students of the law, and the Pharisees are the religious police, you've heard me say before. So these two representative groups come along and they bring forward a woman who has been caught in a sexual act. I can't say it any other way, because that's what it says in Scripture, the very act of committing adultery. The Mosaic law requires two witnesses before somebody could be brought before the judges. So this is a pretty horrible scene, no matter which way we look at it. This poor woman has been spied on. So we start to think for ourselves here, what's the greatest sin here? What's the real judgment? I mean, why did she end up being spied on? What did her husband set her up? Were people setting her husband up? Because for her to be brought forward was going to dishonour the husband. And honour was the greatest thing that caused most arguments in biblical times in the communities. So where did all of this come from? And then there's the background theme there, or mood there, by these scribes and Pharisees. They're trying to catch Jesus out, who is a good man, saying and doing good things. He's not a troublemaker. They had no shortage of those. So at every level, when you look at this story, this event, it's nasty. It exemplifies the worst of human behaviour at every level. And she's not immune. I'm not saying, she's innocent. I'm not saying that at all, and neither is Jesus. Because he says right at the end, it's kind of like a sting in the tail. He says, "And then neither do I condemn you. Go now and don't sin anymore." So this is a life-changing moment for her. No wonder it stayed in the community, because it would have had equally as big an impact on the leaders of the community as well as this poor woman whose life he saved. It must have been very powerful. You bring somebody forward, you've got your two witnesses. Jesus was not allowed to condemn anybody to death. The Pharisees and the lawmakers at the time in 30 AD, about 30 AD, that privilege given to the leaders of the Jewish community was taken from them by the Romans. Only the Roman procurator or the governor or the senior Roman official could have somebody killed. So Jesus was never in a position to say, yeah, stone her. I mean, stoning in itself, think about that, and I'm sure you haven't, I hope you haven't, is quite a strange thing, because the victim is here, somebody announces guilty or innocent, but we never actually know which stone or which blow kills her. That's why they use stoning. It's not because it's prolonged and it's painful. You cannot put the finger of blame on one person who throws the stone, because you don't actually know which stone killed her. That's why it's spread out that way. And then you look at Jesus and you think he's nodded off to sleep because he's doodling in the sand, which was not uncommon. Still isn't uncommon. Some of you might be doing it right now with your pens, I don't know. But it's not uncommon because he's thinking. But I suspect that Jesus going down and writing in the sand, he wasn't drawing stick figures. I suspect that the authors left that in there because writing was the symbol of judgment again. We've got the Mount of Olives. We've got the physical judgment of the people who bring this poor girl forward. She's got the judgment that she's giving herself, I am sure, and of her husband. And they're asking Jesus to be judge here. And so the symbol of judgment would be writing the judicial outcome. And they would be saying, is he going to write death? You know, thumbs up, thumbs down. What's it going to be? And he very cleverly, and I wish we were that clever, to take the time out before we responded with our judgments so in such hostility at times against things that we might not understand or agree with. But we're very quick to respond, which is actually a reaction. And Jesus takes the time, steps back, and he comes up with that beautiful example for us all. Hard to follow, but a beautiful example. And he says, well, if none of them have condemned you, then neither do I. I think part of our problem, and I say this to myself, I think part of our problem is that we don't hear those words of Jesus very often in our life. He actually says, then neither do I condemn you. We beat ourselves up constantly, most of us do, over the things we do or we haven't done in our life. And then we go deaf. We never, it seems to me, hear enough of knowing that Jesus is there saying to us, then neither do I condemn you. I don't want you to continue your bad behaviour, he would be saying, as he said to this woman, but I'm not going to condemn you. We please just try to remember that in our life. You know, the worst moments in your life where you have been involved or I have been involved in the worst things are still no greater than the love that he gives to us. Our evilness, our bad behaviour does not outweigh ever the love or the mercy of God. He loves you and he loves me. He knows we're broken, and he also knows that we come here to this place to receive the gift of his Eucharist, to give us the strength to go out there and change our bad behaviour. It's not just a habit. Well, if it is, it should be habit-forming. And then our personal world and our world of influence should be getting better. And if it's not in your close circle, if it's not getting any better, then listen again to those words. Then neither do I condemn you. You don't need to keep behaving that way. Just know you are loved. That's all we need to hear as we prepare to listen to the Passion twice. Just know you're loved. Jesus isn't like the scribes and the Pharisees peeping through the window at whatever you're doing. He just wants to love you.